Football Weekly Extra.
In today's bulletin from Pod Central, come out, football purists, the Champions League group stage is over. And unlike a sitter for Robbie Keane, it won't be missed. Questions: who's impressed, who's depressed? And if Jose Mourinho was brought in to win the Champions League at Inter, how exactly are his job prospects? Elsewhere, Sid's on the line to talk ours, that's the Ramos Real rescue, and Madrid's chances at the Bernabeu this weekend. There's a look forward to other weekend games around Europe: Juve Milan, Bayern Stuttgart, Hof Schalke, and the Premier League, as Zola returns to Stamford Bridge and Burby goes back to the lane. All that, plus your posts and assorted miscellanea in today's Football Weekly Extra. In the pod today, more ugly mugs than a night out with Darius Fussell, it says here, but we can't say that, can we? That's terrible. Where should we start? Sean Ingle.
Hello, James.
Hi, Sean, and many thanks for your help with today's podcast.
That's all right.
You've been a bit more hands-on than usual, haven't you?
Well, we're in a different buildings at the moment, so
right.
We can't have our morning cappuccino together and croissant.
We can't. I miss that.
I should also tell the listeners, rather, we're being filmed.
We're being filmed.
Barry, unfortunately, hasn't come in with his makeup and his his foundation on, so he's not here today, but right. We have a camera glaring at us, so apologies if we're preening and stuttering more than usual.
Right. Camera loves Raphael Honigstein, of course.
Not from this angle.
Ooh.
This is my
right. Back. Hello. All right. And they're over there, Rob Smythe.
James, hello.
Hi, Rob, how are you? Nice to see you.
Yeah, pretty
like
nice.
That T-shirt.
I like your beard.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Okay, good. Now, Champions League, hey? It's all over, the group stage.
Thank God.
Well,
no.
You say that, Raphael. Defend the group stage.
He's been getting so much unfair stick with Champions League. I can't believe it. Well, first of all, I would say that it's a very English view that the group stage is really boring, borne out by the fact that it's the same four teams 6 years running. You ask an Atletico, Bordeaux, Juve or Famagusta fan about the Champions League, they say, fantastic, brilliant, great, glad to be back, or in it in the first place. Secondly, all this nostalgic rubbish about the good old days when we had Santa Coloma v Kaunas and Dinamo Tirana, Modric. Actually these games happening, no one watches them. They're called the first qualifying group. And, you know, by that standard, this was one of the best Champions League ever because Kaunas knocked out Rangers. Yeah, fantastic, amazing. So I just don't understand why all of a sudden the group stage is like the worst thing in the world. And finally, just to finish my little rant here, what is wrong with a competition that is geared towards making the best teams go through, rather than those who get lucky in draws? I don't see the point.
Rob, sure.
I don't think it's fair for a start. You give these teams kind of six strikes and then you're out. I just think people.
You give everybody six strikes.
Yeah,
and then you're
but
out.
It's the whole
reduces the chances of.
Well, what Rafa's saying is a good
if it
thing.
Had only say, been two
yeah, what
games.
Rafa's saying is a good thing. I say it's a bad thing. I think the more games there are, the more chance there is of the good teams going through, and I don't think that's necessarily.
For example, if
Cluj
had played Roma over two legs, they would have gone through.
The thing is, right, in the last since they
except they wouldn't because Roma beat
in
them.
The last six seasons, only twice has what you might term a superpower failed to go through the group stages. Inter in 03-04 and Manchester United in 05-06. Now that takes in 11 teams, four from England, the two Milan clubs, Juve, Bayern, Lyon, Barcelona and Real Madrid. Mm. Two in 6 years, that's nonsense. That's just not a competition.
I think the other thing to say is that only, I think, three of the 16 games this week were live ties. And we all know it's the same procession year after year. It's great that we see teams like Cluj, but wouldn't be so much better. Or Panathinaikos, but wouldn't be so much better like if early on, you know, you could get Inter v Manchester United, or you could, you know, a team had a bad performance, they were kicked out.
Chelsea made an almighty balls up of their group, and yet they still went through ultimately quite easily. Now, had they had, for example, Roma or whoever, or even Cluj, and they got a 0-0, suddenly at 1-1 on Tuesday.
But you'll be very happy when Chelsea will be playing Barcelona next round rather than Cluj.
No, I won't, because all those games are completely boring. They're just so familiar with each other.
I take your point, Rob. The only thing I would counter this with, I do agree that, for example, the round of games this week, there were only three that were actually relatively meaningful.
I agree with
however,
sorry.
However,
after you,
although the group stage means there are massively more meaningless games, there are also more meaningful games than would. If you have a knockout stage, you get very exciting matches. And you get them too, but it's just they're mixed in with a whole lot of dross. But that's fine, you don't watch
it. How exciting is it every year to see Liverpool play Bratvors Bratislava in the
It's better than watching Liverpool-Chelsea.
No, it's not. It's no one watches these games because they're completely meaningless. And the first leg is won 4-0, and the second leg the reserves play. And I don't see
what about if Liverpool get... I agree with that, but what about Liverpool get Atletico Madrid, for example, last year...
the off chance that they might get Atletico Madrid.
Last year, Liverpool lost at home to Marseille, and yet still were able to go through pretty much by winning the last game.
Yeah, because they beat Marseille away. What's wrong with that?
They had that incredible cavalcade of results. That was very exciting.
Was it?
When they looked like they were out, they had to win.
Newcastle
and
lost their first three games in 2002-03 and went through. How can you lose three games and go through? What sort of cup competition is that?
My point would
be... Exactly, but the essence of a cup competition...
It's a good point, Rafa.
...is completely different to
that
of a
league. My point would
but
be
it's
that
not. That's why it's called the Champions League.
Exactly.
I prefer to call it the European Cup.
But it normally kicks off, really, Champions League proper, right at the end of February. So you get, what? You get
beginning of February.
March, April, and a bit of May, and that's it. I think the tournament, if it stretched out, you'd have 8 months of, you have one bad performance, you could be out. So it's much more
exciting. How good would it be if it was an unseeded draw and Barcelona got Chelsea in September? No UEFA Cup consolation prize. One of them's gone in the first month of the season.
Yeah, but you're going to have...
Well, it happened in 77-78, Forest-Liverpool.
No, what I'm saying is in the current climate,
clearly of course it's not. So why are we having this conversation?
I think the only good thing about the Champions League group stage is it averts the prospect of European Super League, which I think none of us would want. Probably. Rafa probably would.
I'd love that.
Because I quite like the sense that there is a competition for pride. Again, I think this is a very English-centric view because
I think there's never
don't have a proper league where there's no competition here for Champions League places.
Okay, all right.
So obviously it gets very boring to see the same four teams week in and week year in, year out. But it's a very different point when Schalke come in and they have to play Atletico Madrid in the third round of qualifying and one of those two, the really big teams, getting knocked out and don't make the promised land of the Champions League. It becomes very important.
2 points. How do you explain the fact there's only three live games in 16 this week? How can that be a good thing?
But first of all, it's only three games if you don't count the fact that it was still up for grabs whether who comes first or second, which I know is seen as a bit of a joke, but I'm telling you there's a lot of teams that really tried winning last night because they desperately wanted to have the second leg at home for the last 16, so it's not that much of a dead rubber. And secondly, it's of course after five games, you expect the best teams to go through, and I don't see what's wrong with that. I don't understand how people attack the Champions League because it's all about entertainment money, but the argument is it's not entertaining enough. Let's have it more entertaining, but have a complete random draw. But you can't have it both. You can either have a sporting competition or you can have entertainment. And I think the Champions League is a good compromise.
What do you think of the point that two of the dangerous things about the Champions League? A, it perpetuates the gap between the rich and the poor in individual leagues, so in England, in Italy, in Spain, say, and it also accentuates the gap between the rich and the poor across Europe. So you get the big leagues smashing the small leagues. Well, 20 years ago, you would get some of those Eastern European teams having a good chance of winning the whole thing.
Is the difference between leagues because of the Champions League or because of the fact that the TV money
is... I think there are two things...
Right. Within domestically, it's certainly true that the top four in, for example, the Premier League is almost a self-perpetuating club.
I think that obviously a Famagusta will use the money, and if they use it wisely, they will win the Cypriot League again, and they might come back, and then they might become a dynasty like Lyon. And I do see the danger in that, but at the same time, I don't think that's enough to say, let's grab the group stages, because the group stage is also a fantastic format to redistributing money across Europe. Because if you are Aalborg, you're suddenly playing six games against top competition and make a lot of money. And, I think it was their first time ever in the Champions League. Otherwise, they might have one exciting draw, but they might also have three terrible draws and then get knocked out in the fourth one and make no money whatsoever.
But they have some glory, because if they get three, four rounds, they might make it to the quarterfinals.
No, but it's more glorious to play away to Old Trafford and to play, who else did they play? Man United, Villarreal and Celtic. These are great ties.
Mm. Well, they got stamped on by Wayne Rooney for their trouble.
Yes, that is a privilege.
What's Wayne on?
Well, I didn't see it, but he has this wonderful ability to kind of lose his temper in games where nobody else really cares. Mm. And apparently he did last night. And given what happened to Patrice Evra, I expect Rooney will probably put on the house arrest for about a year or something by way of punishment. But I didn't actually see it. So
it's that sudden kind of Incredible Hulk moment where he goes from being perfectly normal to that sudden kind of the explosion of violence. Everything just goes.
Beckham had a similar quality as well. He just suddenly start hairing around after him, and you think, oh dear.
Would it be a quality?
Well, you could. Yeah, defensive
trade.
Well, there you go. No, you, this side of the table wasn't very excited by the group stage. Now that it is down to knockout football, who? Anyone you'd watch out for?
Barcelona are the obvious one. I mean, they're 9-2 at the moment. I think they're by far the best team in Europe at the moment. Obviously, things change. I remember a few years ago when they drew Liverpool. Barcelona were flying through the league then. Liverpool were struggling horribly. But yet, come February, Barcelona had hit a rough patch. Liverpool started playing better, and so things do change.
Right.
But to me, they are by far the best team in Europe at the moment.
I think what Sean says is relevant. There are myriad examples of teams who have qualified really impressively. Porto did it about 12 years ago. I think they beat Milan home and away, best team in Europe. By March, they went to Old Trafford, was tonked 4-0. So it happened so much. I think Barcelona do look great, but we don't know much. I have a sneaking friends for Juve. I'm not really sure why.
Well, that's nice. I mean, Alex Tupper is a lovely chap. And the Italian clubs is interesting. I mean, from what you're saying, that seems to be very much the philosophy that Jose Mourinho's espousing at the moment, i.e. that the Champions League really begins come March, and that's when he's going to get things right. And he's certainly been tinkering and experimenting with his side, and that's given as one of the reasons why Inter have been the real disappointments of the group stages. They've only won 2 games out of 6, which when you think of the players they've got, when you think that Jose was brought in specifically with that remit.
But United only won 2 out of 6 as well. But
well, I think that's disappointing as well. And they were in a really easy group, Inter, and they've looked rubbish. It's not just the fact
that... Can I just say that in that particular group, there was not a single match that was meaningless?
But anyway, yeah, it's a big question they're asking about in Italy, because, of course, Inter every year, is either, I don't know, Villarreal, Valencia, Liverpool last time around. There's always somebody who knocks out Inter when it's supposed to be the year they finally get it right. And based on this group stage, Jose Mourinho's arrivals meant absolutely no difference at all. As I say, there's been a lot of talk about the fact that he's been experimenting with tactics, but I just think the weird thing that I'm seeing with Mourinho in Italy, compared to what he was doing at Stamford Bridge, where it was all about, I'll take the flak, I'll play this public role so that I'll keep the pressure off the players, is that he keeps going out and giving his players stick. And as a result, there seems to be a complete lack of confidence and enjoyment in the team.
Does he have John Terry, Frank Lampard type figures who he clearly is bonded with and kind of relies on?
I don't think he does particularly, no, because even people like Zanetti, who traditionally have been the pillar of the side, haven't got an especially good relationship. Ibrahimovic has, and I think there are, you know, certain similarities between them. But especially at the back, against Werder Bremen, they look absolutely dismal. Cordoba, who's allegedly was the fastest player in Serie A, got left standing for the second Bremen goal. Roma, perhaps, if you were going to talk about teams that might surprise people, the final's in Rome, and that's something they keep talking about down in Eternal City. Clearly, they'll get knocked out in the next round. But I know I wrote off their chances when they were about to face Chelsea, and then that's where it all started to turn around for them. What the situation will be like in March, I've no idea, but well done, Roma. There you go, that's probably enough for part one. We're going to hear a lot, no doubt, read the Champions League from Sid Lowe very, very shortly, who's just witnessed Wandy Ramos make his debut on the Real bench in their Champions League game against Think's Hard Zenit St. Petersburg. Let's hear from Sid after this. Hi, Sid Lowe in Madrid.
Hello, James.
Hi, how are you, Doctor?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Very well. I'm joined here by Rob Smythe, Sean Ingle, Raphael Honigstein, and viewers on guardian.co.uk.
Viewers?
Indeed. Of course, you and I are used to that, as is Raphael. Yeah, the camera. No problem there. Listen, sorry, let's get on with the meaty stuff.
Just make me and Rob feel inadequate.
Right. Barcelona are facing Real Madrid this weekend. Wandy Ramos has been appointed, as you hinted he would be in our last conversation. And he got off to a cracking start, Sid. Tell us.
Well, he sort of did. I mean, they beat Zenit St. Petersburg 3-0, and there were periods of the game that were reasonably impressive for Real Madrid. That said, I think that, you know, we kind of have to take to heart to some extent what Dick Advocaat said after the game about Zenit. First question in the press conference, he said, look, to be honest with you, after a game like that, as bad as that, I feel like I should just say, I'm not going to answer any questions, good night, goodbye. And there was this pause. Everyone thought, oh, he's going to walk out. And then he said, no, but, you know, ask your questions, that's fine. But I think the point was that Zenit really played pretty poorly. Real Madrid had good patches. But of course, it's a bit early to know for sure. There were one or two really intriguing things that Ramos did, though, over the course of the game, which suggest some fairly major changes for the Barcelona match of the weekend.
Well, like not having Iker Casillas in goal, is that one of them?
That was very intriguing, and I think there were a lot of us thinking, hang on, what's going on here? He was asked about Casillas after the game, Ramos, and Ramos said, well, Casillas is a Spain goalkeeper. He's brilliant. I've got no question he's a magnificent goalkeeper. But he didn't actually say what everyone wanted him to say, which was, don't think it was just a one-off. Casillas will be back against Barcelona. He said, I'll decide over the next couple of days, which was very interesting because he also described Jerzy Dudek as a magnificent goalkeeper. Now, it seems that Casillas had been told by Bernd Schuster that he wouldn't play and that Dudek was going to be given the chance to play. And that basically what Ramos was doing was just respecting that and giving Dudek a game. But it was quite interesting. It was sort of, that's a bit of a question mark there. Then there was a couple of other changes which were very significant for the Camp Nou. We had Metzelder playing at right back, which is quite bizarre. Michel Salgado playing at left back for the first time in his career, which is bizarre. Which is, of course, because of the fact that Real Madrid go to the Camp Nou without Pepe, who's injured, without Heinze, who's injured, and without Marcelo, who's suspended. So there isn't a left back in the team.
Sid, how the Spanish press responded to this? Rene Ramos' appointment, rather, and the game last night.
Yeah, as you can imagine, there's optimism in so much as, you know, everybody knows, I think, and you know, I've argued before that Bernd Schuster isn't solely to blame for Real Madrid's crisis, but there's absolutely no doubt that he was doing a hell of a lot of things wrong, and that he'd basically withdrawn into himself, he'd given up, and I think there's been a long period now, probably 5 or 6 weeks, where you look at the Real Madrid team and you think, they just don't do any work at all. They have no sense of where to be on the pitch, no sense of where to play, and I was talking to a former player last night who was saying, well, the thing is, you could put the bloody kit man on the pitch if you tell him exactly where to stand, and at the very least he's going to be an obstacle to the other side. Real Madrid can't even do that at the moment, or at least couldn't under Schuster. So I think they did need to change it.
The Cinecal saying Barack Obama taking over as president of the USA at a point where their economy is tanking, employment and industrial output data at their worst since the Great Depression, fiscal deficit of astronomical proportions, embroiled in two catastrophic military actions, and Wendy Ramos is taking over as the manager of Real Madrid. Who has the harder job, especially when you debut against an incredibly successful Barcelona side? Does he have any chance? Is there any prospect that his arrival will change the odds, shorten the odds in Real's favour this weekend?
Well, I think so to some extent, in so much as because Schuster had so completely given up, you got the feeling that Real Madrid might lack the one thing that they can still offer, which is spirit and courage and the ability to really kind of try and be aggressive against Barcelona and get a result. I'm also reluctant to say that Barcelona will destroy them, because over the last few years, every time it's looked like the game has been completely imbalanced, it's actually tended not to work out that way, apart from last year when Real Madrid went and hammered Barcelona 4-1 after a season which Barca had been awful and Madrid had been really quite good. So I'm reluctant to write them off, but in purely footballing terms, you look at it and you think at the moment the difference between the two sides is absolutely huge. But I also think that what we'll probably see is that Real Madrid will be very defensive, and the question mark will be, as it's been so many times with Barcelona, will Barca get the first goal, or will they get anxious when the first goal doesn't come? If they get the first goal early, Barcelona, I can see them really wiping the floor with Real Madrid. But as I say, it's just so difficult to know, because as the old cliche goes, these games, that sort of, it almost doesn't matter what the results have been going into it. It does tend to be a game apart. Also, in terms of has Juan de Ramos got a difficult job, it depends how you judge it. Because, of course, Juan de Ramos has got a difficult job. He's got a team that's a mess. He's got players who can't play in certain positions. He's got other players injured. He's got other players that you know, just aren't on good form. But I suppose from Ramos' point of view, anything now is an improvement on Schuster. So if he goes to Camp Nou and loses 2-1, everyone will say, that's pretty good, you know. That was quite close. Schuster would have been battered 6-0. So I think in that sense, Ramos perhaps is in a reasonably good position on a personal level. Now, that's not necessarily to say that he's in a good position in terms of what Real Madrid can achieve.
Sid, I'm just wondering what your opinion is. Could the unthinkable happen this season, that Real Madrid will not qualify for the Champions League?
I think the unthinkable, yeah, definitely could happen. And I think you look at the table at the moment and you think, well, Sevilla, Valencia, Villarreal, Atletico Madrid even, they've all got the capability to get into the top four alongside Barcelona, who I think now almost certainly going to win the league, although it is a bit early to say that. And I think it is a possibility. However, bizarrely enough, you know, I also think it's a possibility that Real Madrid could go on and do something in the Champions League. They're going to buy 3 or 4 players over the winter transfer market. Huntelaar, of course, is coming in. Arshavin maybe next. There's 2 or 3 others. Although Arshavin can't play in the Champions League. And Real Madrid, it certainly hasn't been lost on their fans that the last couple of big successes in the Champions League have been when they've been frankly terrible in La Liga.
Very interesting. Sid, magnificent stuff. Look forward to hearing your report on the game at the Bernabeu on Monday. When's it being played?
Saturday night at 10 o'clock in Barcelona.
Crikey. Okay. Look forward to that then, and have a lovely weekend.
Thanks for trying. Cheers.
Cheers, Sid. Rafael.
Yes.
Bundesliga. Bayern's Christmas party.
Yes.
Yes.
It's very good. No children were sired, as far as I know, this time round. It's very early, family entertainment, very family friendly.
What I'm trying to work out is, why did Bastian Schweinsteiger dress up as his model girlfriend, and how far did he go? Did he... Was there man boobs in? Was there?
I don't think so.
The scene out of Blackadder where they all wear
comedy.
It's on the web. You can find shots of the Bayern Christmas do, which was at a circus, Turkus Corner, a very famous Munich circus. And I think his model girlfriend was doing some presentation, and then the compere asked him to come on stage and wear a blonde wig. I think that was really the extent of the similarity.
Right.
As far as we know, we don't know what he wears in private. But it was all fun and games. And Lucatoni had knives thrown at him. And Ribéry was playing football with dogs.
Lucky it was that way rather than the other way around. It wouldn't want to be throwing out with Lucatoni.
No, his current form. Although he's been good enough.
Yeah.
Best team in the Champions League?
Bayern Munich. What, statistically?
Mm-hmm. Well, out of all teams.
Best team points. In the Champions League?
Points.
Really?
Yeah.
More than Barcelona?
14 points.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. And they've been building nicely under that man.
I still think that there's some major issues still unresolved when it comes to the team. Van Bommel, Rensing in goal, you know, the back four. But the most interesting bit of all, and I think there's something that perhaps Sid and other people, perhaps even you, will talk about a bit more come the next year, is the fact that even Bayern, who've been turning over something like 368 million euros last season, have said that next season they're not going to go spend big because they think that they're going to be really hit by the credit crunch. Not because of TV money, that's not a big sum anyway, but because they rely on sponsorship, marketing, and they all think it's going to go down. Mm. Sponsors, etc., are going to have a lot less money, and they think they're going to suffer. So they've decided not to go for Gomez, who cost something about 25 million euros, but instead go for Ivica Olic, the Hamburg forward, who's going to be available for free. And, buying go, others usually follow, certainly in Germany, but it'd be interesting to see what other big clubs will do.
All right, is this weekend the last round of games before the winter
it
break?
It is, yes. And then no more German football until the 30th of January.
Mm.
Don't they play sort of little six-a-side games? I used to watch that back in the day when I was about 15, 16 and I was bored. They'd often on RTL or Sat Eins, they would have...
It's true.
Right. When you were bored when you were 16, that's what you watched on RTL?
Yeah.
Right. Because there were one or two other programmes.
Yeah, but they were later on. They were later.
Okay.
Yeah. No. It's it used to be quite a big thing, but people don't go anymore, and it's sort of been quietly abandoned.
See, I used to love the just before Christmas in England, they would have a six-a-side tournament. What was it called, Rob?
Soccer Sixes. Guinness Soccer Sixes.
Something like that, and it had great
goals. G-Mex.
The G-Mex. They'd show it on Sports Night, and that was always great fun. But people may remember that, or they may not. Sorry.
Anyway, okay, well, there you go. And some big games.
Big games, because Hoffenheim, you know, back from their defeat away to Bayern, have got Schalke at home, and everybody's looking at them to see, you know, can they bounce back, or, you know, will this be the start of the beginning of the end for them? I don't think it will be. I think they're good enough to beat Schalke, who are frankly pretty poor. And Bayern have got a tough game away to Stuttgart.
And Hoffenheim on the transfer front have just signed
They signed Timo Hildebrand from Valencia on a free transfer. His contract was dissolved.
Is that for next year then?
No, he's already come. Playing in, he's eligible in from the 1st of January, I think.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, cool. There you go. Now, Italy, classic match coming up this weekend. It is Juventus-Milan. They're both 6 points behind Inter at the top of the table. And a huge game there at the Stadio Olimpico in Turin, which may actually have some people in it this weekend. Don't know if you saw the pictures. I mean, absolutely desolate and deserted midweek for the Champions League, of course. In fact, who was it? Michelino posting in saying, I read that Juve are building a new stadium that will seat about 41,000. Why is it that they wouldn't need a bigger stadium?
Well, they have a bigger stadium, they can't fill it.
What, the Stadio degli Alpi?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was a particularly unpleasant stadium. I think
it wasn't that bad.
It was an awful stadium.
I remember seeing Rail against Juve there. It was lovely.
I think the magnitude of the game perhaps coloured your recollection
perhaps,
of the stadium.
Nice view over the Alps, it was.
Well, yeah, but it was the view over. They were almost as close as the pitch from most of the seats there, to be frank. It was awful. It was really cold. I mean, phenomenally cold, because it was sunk into the ground, which, when you're playing at the foot of the Alps, not the best idea, really. It was very bad logistically, and it was you were miles away from the pitch. We've probably talked about this before. They put a running track in so they could get council money, but they didn't put a big enough one in, so they could never use it for any running.
But you always seemed fairly cosy when you were huddled up next to Don Howe back in the day on Football Italia.
Right, the magic of television. That's what that was. No, they built a smaller one, and I think that makes absolute sense. It's going to be interesting to see what them having their own stadium is going to do to the rest of Serie A, who completely ignored the progress that's been made on this front in the last couple of decades and are now paying the price for it, all the Italian clubs, because you have this phenomenon of they're all being provided for them by the local council. Juve are now finally, this is about the sixth time they've announced it, and it does look like it's going to happen this time. They are going ahead with this new ground, which will be ready in a couple of years' time, and I think 41,000 is a lovely quantity. It was pointed out by various people, though, that on the occasions that they played elsewhere, in Palermo, in the San Siro, they got sold-out crowds there when they took their European games there about a decade ago, actually, not a long time back. They can still, you know, draw the crowds, but just not in Turin. But there you go, Turin, not a big football town, of course. Anyway, now, this weekend, Juve taking on Milan. Gattuso's out for 6 months. Flamini may therefore start, so may Andrei Shevchenko, which is very bad news for Milan. And Milan come in with all sorts of injuries. Pirlo's in doubt. Seedorf's in doubt, although they're hoping those two are going to get back. Boriello, possibly Ronaldinho out. Juve, of course, got loads of injuries as well. But a huge match is because, of course, whoever wins this is going to be dubbed the anti-Inter. So there you go. Sunday night. Not on television in England, of course. But there you go. Or in Germany, Rafael.
Yeah. Sadly.
Posts. Hardcore Prawn, can I ask that the podsters give a bit of coverage in Thursday's Football Weekly Extra to the Homeless World Cup that finished this weekend in Melbourne? A real heartwarming and inspiring event for the next year's tournament in Milan. I'd encourage anyone in the vicinity to go along. For the record, Afghanistan beat Russia 5-4 in the final. It says Argentina spray here. I thought that was a poster, but it's actually a note saying. Sean, I think, was it you wanted us to talk about...
Well, no, just very briefly, I thought it might be a point of interest that,
right,
you know, they've been training now for the last 6 months in Argentine Division 2.
Sorry
for boring you. This sort of shaving cream
yes.
that you spray onto the pitch, I think it was used in Brazil a couple of years ago as
exactly,
well.
Exactly, it was.
Yeah, but I think, you know, they're looking now... be in the Argentinian first division. I think that's probably, if that goes ahead and is fine, it could eventually be used across the world.
Right. Okay.
Who's carrying the can?
You two with those beards of yours, but
well, indeed, it's magic spray. What happens is you spray it on, and then it vanishes. It disappears after 30 seconds. And of course, Michael Owen's been using it for donkey's years. I was trying to think of a player who actually disappears. It's not fair to Michael Owen, is it? But yeah,
it is.
The structure of the gag is I think sound. Okay, let's move on to part three after this musical interlude.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
Sean, many thanks because you've helped me out a bit here. You sent an email with lots of suggestions and stuff. Top of which, here we got Chesterfield against Droylsden. Chesterfield scored a disputed goal 8 minutes from the end of that game after a player had been injured, and the throw-in, instead of being given back to the team with the injured player, to the opposition team, a la Kanu, was taken on and scored. And Chesterfield manager Lee Richardson was such a nice bloke. He said, go on, let Droylsden score an uncontested goal, and they did.
What was the score at the time? Chesterfield 10-0 up?
I don't know, actually. Producer Pete's our font of knowledge on this. They finished 2-2. Meanwhile, away from the bright lights of Chesterfield Droylsden in the Premier League, Spurs are taking on Man United. Now, we were going to have a bit of a chat, Sean was suggesting, about Berbatov's return to White Hart Lane, but apparently he's in doubt because of his hamstring. Is that right?
He is, but Ferguson said a couple of weeks ago he definitely wouldn't play at Villa, and I think he played. I didn't really notice him for 90 minutes.
It's hard to know with Berbatov, isn't it?
It is, but yeah, right. I suspect he'll be fit.
Now, we on the pod viewed his early appearances for United with a bit of a cold. We weren't very excited about it, and some people have taken us to task about jumping the gun on that one, and that, you know, his true value is going to
be coming around now to us, though.
Right. What do you think, as a United observer of long standing?
The backlash has certainly begun. There's a hell of a lot of people who don't particularly like him because of his kind of languorous nature. But it's getting a bit ridiculous. People are now kind of citing absurd pieces of evidence. For example, Vidic's goal last week, he ran past Berbatov to get to the ball, so suddenly Berbatov doesn't care. It's getting a bit silly, but I do think there are kind of uncomfortable shades of Juan Verón, who kind of ruined the club for about 5 years, in the way that he's compromised the system, he's kind of perceived as lazy, has kind of had a really negative impact on a really popular player, Tevez, and Scholes before with Verón. So I think there are legitimate concerns, but I do think it's too early to call. And also, Berbatov at Spurs was pretty much useless before Christmas and then scored a glut of goals after. Didn't have a pre-season, so I do think it would be harsh to kind of write him off yet.
I'd agree with Rob. I mean, I think tactically, though, the problem with United last season, they had Tevez, they had Rooney, they had Ronaldo at front three that switched quite often. Often you'd have Ronaldo bombing down the middle. Berbatov obviously doesn't give you that flexibility, and I think United have suffered from that. Obviously, there are other things as well. I think, you know, Ronaldo's form isn't as good this season, but it is a worry, I think.
There are two ways. Well, they are playing differently.
He's scored about 11 goals, hasn't he?
Seven, Ronaldo. I think, in the league.
One thing in Berbatov's defence, only Arteta has got more assists, and I think Rudy's the only centre-forward to have created more chances. This is kind of as Opta determined chances. So clearly he's doing that part of the job quite well.
The thing about Berbatov is it's very hard to judge him by conventional terms, because when you look at a football player, you do expect them to run and show commitment and all that kind of thing, and he clearly doesn't do any of that. But what he does do is, I can think of several decisive goals that he's either set up or scored for United.
The only thing it would be that most of those have been at home to poor teams. There's a sense that he's brilliant at home to
West
Ham.
And they've already got one player like that.
Well, quite.
You're talking about his presence implying the sacrifice of Carlos Tevez, but how long is Carlos Tevez going to be around anyway? Are they going to splash out the $30 million to keep him?
They keep saying they will, but
it's not $30 million, though. Because that includes already $10 million that they've been paid. They've been paying for his services for the last 2 years, including this one. But I think that's an excellent point, and you just wonder if there is a relationship or a connection between the fact that Tevez has been so blatantly overlooked by Ferguson and the delay on progress on the new transfer. Because I think we've heard a few stories of Tevez being wanting away and he's going to go, but I think United are playing a little bit for time because they know that his options are closing down. You know, Real Madrid, despite the fact that they're not buying a lot of players, they already spent $27 million on Huntelaar, and effectively he is a player out of contract, and so next season. So what they're paying him is like a glorified sign-on fee, and I think they're just wondering, you know, in the current climate, if we do this deal in a few months' time, we'll probably get him for much cheaper. Why do it now?
Interesting. Would they? So the price would come down because his contract with
there is no. There is no contract because they are acquiring the rights from MSI.
Right. And those rights lapse in 6 months, do they, or what? How does it work?
No, at the moment it's a loan deal.
Yeah.
For 2 years.
And to make it a permanent deal.
And they finish in the summer.
Right.
So they can then either extend that loan deal.
Right.
But there's a problem because since that deal has been done, new regulations have come in the Premier League prohibiting third-party ownership.
Right.
Or, you know, they must buy him outright, but they would effectively buy him from MSI to take over the whole economic rights.
And that's the $20 million price tag.
Yes, that is the tag that's been quoted to them. What I'm saying is they might as well just say, you know what, we don't want to pay $20 million, we're only going to pay $15 million and call their bluff, because I think he hasn't got that many places to go.
Interesting. All right, well, what about the game on Saturday then? Man United visiting White Hart Lane. Spurs have won 4 of their last 6 in the league. Harry Kidnap posting in saying, if I was a Spurs fan, I don't know if I'd be happy my team had turned it around and playing well, or peed off at the fact that this squad of pretty talented players were so poor at the start of the season just because they were sulking at the manager. It's extraordinary the way that things have turned around since Harry's come in. How do you view their chances against United?
They have a chance. You'd obviously favour United, but Spurs at home, they've got a chance.
Well, United without Evra and Rooney suspended, potentially without Ferdinand, Ronaldo.
So the Evra three-game suspension, that's begun...
Four games. Well, it was five because of... he had one for accumulated bookings.
Right.
And then four for whatever he did. So it's 5 games, yeah.
And this is from the altercation at the end of last season with the Stamford Bridge grounds.
But United are still to decide, as we go on air, whether to appeal or not.
Yeah.
As far as I can remember, they've never done anything against United at home last
few years. They went 3-0 up and then lost 5-3.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't think they can really pose.
But it was the same with Liverpool, though. Spurs had had, you know, a great run around the turn of the decade beating Liverpool, and they hadn't won, off the top of my head, 2002, 2003, I think. And they won, albeit fortuitously, earlier this season.
I think also United have won something like 3 of the last 16 away in all competitions. They're not playing that well away, and they're not scoring goals away. That's the big problem.
Interesting. Chelsea, meanwhile, hosting West Ham. So Gianfranco Zola returning to Stamford Bridge, which is a lovely, heartwarming tale. Mm. Stamford Bridge, no longer the fortress it once was, and indeed they've only lost. They've only won 2 of their last 7 Premier League games there, Chelsea. Isn't that extraordinary?
I don't think it is the way they play. I think with an Elker up front, someone who needs space in behind, if teams park the bus, they have nowhere to go. When Drogba plays, I think it's completely different.
Will Drogba play with an Elker this weekend, do you think?
No.
Sure.
It's a really interesting one. I don't think he will either, but I think it's a point that Chelsea are going to have to work out in the next weeks and months, because I think if they play the two up front, which I think is the only way it will work, you can't shove an Elker on the wing in a 4-3-3 because he's useless there. Then you have to ask what you do with all your midfielders when Essien comes back, when Deco is playing, and obviously Lampard and Balak as well.
Well, they already have an imbalance. They're playing Mikel in the Essien role, and they're playing Lampard, Balak and Deco, which means Deco is being shunted to the left. So if you then go 4-4-2, you have to lose another midfield player. I just don't see it happening. I think, except as an emergency, they beat Arsenal last year when they brought an Elkron to play alongside Drogba and they bullied them for the last 20 minutes. Mm. Went from 1-0 down to 2-1 up. I think that's the only way it will happen.
With Essien as left back.
There's no competition, surely, between Drogba and Anelka, is there? Is there any sense that Anelka would be preferred to him?
Well, Anelka's the top scorer in the Premier League.
And Scolari's been quite vocal in support of Anelka, hasn't he?
Yeah. Well, he certainly was after the Champions League, saying, yeah, Drogba scored the goal that qualified us, but we're at this point because of Anelka's goals.
Can I ask Rafa something about the sort of the various factions at Chelsea at the moment? Because there's been some rumblings about, well, you know, certain players not getting on other players, which was happened all the time during the Grant era. And it's starting to happen again in the Scolari era.
Is it over lunch money? Is it?
Well, it happened all.
No, because you know
it happened all the time under Mourinho as well. I don't think it's necessarily a reflection of the manager. The thing is, you hear about it now because things don't go as planned, and then players look for excuses and start blaming each other. And there was a big team meeting after the Arsenal game, and you know words were flying back and forth. But I don't think generally that is Chelsea's problem. I think there is a sort of a slackness around the team, and I think it does come actually from Anelka. If you've got Anelka leading your line with his sort of body language, I'm sorry to be making an obvious point, and Kalou on the left, you know, you're already in a sort of a bad position,
and
a lack of sharpness then permeates through the team. And it was an unbelievable to see Scolari in the first half, you know, the press box Stamford Bridge right behind the Chelsea bench, not just being totally agitated, but also sort of looking at his the football that Chelsea played, and sort of looking like this and.
They're missing.
Good thing we got the camera into that, because that's a very evocative reenactment there of the Scolari.
But his best bit was afterwards, after the press conference, when they said, "You know, does it matter to you now that you're only second? You're going to play a big team." He said, "Oh, no matter. Draw. Okay."
listeners, you want to get across to guardian.co.uk to see that in all its
glory. Coming with a moustache to do a bit.
It's very good, though.
I think if you'd be better Jimbo doing it with his hair, you know, it'd be easy. Probably get away with it.
That's not nice.
Why?
Scolari's got a lot more hair than that. Come on.
He has. Now, listen, West Ham kayaking saying, "I would like to know, what does the pod think about..." You probably don't speak like that, kayaking, sorry. "What does the pod think about Ilunga's constant handballs?" It's true. It's about 6 in 2 games. He just keeps handling. Who do you think he is? Cristiano Ronaldo? What's the story? Have you seen this? He keeps handling. And referees don't seem to be aware of this. They don't give penalties.
I heard about it against Liverpool. Apparently,
he did it 5 times against Liverpool.
Yeah,
and once on the weekend Monday night against Spurs.
I missed the Liverpool game because my Satanta channel was apparently with the rest of
this
London.
Yeah.
Was just blacked out after about 25 minutes. So I missed most of that. But I'm wondering whether you could perhaps have a word with some of the technical boffins.
I'll see what I can do.
So does he simply jump and it hit, or is it kind of how's it getting? How's he handballing exactly?
He just he sticks in the traditional fashion, sticks his arms up, and knocks the ball down with them. And the referee's like, "Yeah, okay, it's Ilunga." I really don't know. Maybe he's got some kind of Jedi mind trick that he goes, "Ref, over there. We're going to take you on Blackburn." Obviously, Paul Ince needs to win that game.
Have you texted him yet?
I did text him. Paul Ince, watch. He texted back.
What did he say?
Well, I said to him, in bocca lupo, and he texted back, crepi, which is the Italian...
mouth of the wolf?
Yeah, in the mouth of the wolf, to which you are supposed to reply, may it die. And that's a form of saying good luck without saying good luck, which, if you're as superstitious as the Italians, is a surefire way of bringing bad luck.
It's like break a leg.
Exactly, sort of thing. Exactly. Liverpool are taking on Hull. And, you know, Liverpool, they've had a couple of goalless draws. West Ham very nearly got that result. And the Hull, they've got a great away record, one of the best away records in the Premier League. Am I dreaming if I suggest that they might get at least a point in that match, the Tigers?
No, you're not. It could very well happen. Although I believe that Liverpool, even with taking these few draws into account, they're actually in a good form right now. I mean, Tuesday night's game, really shows you that they don't have to play that well but still get results at the moment, which is the mark of a team that's really going places.
Against rubbish teams in the Champions League
group
stages. Correct. But in the Premier League, they've really been struggling. And we saw it indeed last weekend, bizarrely, Robbie Keane even benched. You got Torres out with this kind of rapidly worsening hamstring situation. And who was he playing up front?
He played Dirk Kuyt up front and brought Benny Youn in wide right.
Right.
Which is fair enough on form. Keane's been fresh air and everything, so
yeah,
I think it's fair enough.
One other thing I should mention, Pompey Newcastle, I was a bit rude about Michael Owen, but here's some stats that are going to make me look silly, because he's actually the deadliest striker in the league statistically. He's had 6 goals from just 15 shots, that's 40% accuracy, and dating back to the end of last season, he scored 12 goals in 19 Premier League games.
Guess when Owen last scored against the Big Four side? April 2004. Admittedly, he's only played about 12 games against them, but he's so ineffective.
And the stats thing is slightly
dubious.
And he
was in Spain for a while.
Only one year.
But the stats are slightly dubious, because Owen's never been someone that shoots from more than about 8 yards out anyway, so when he shoots, you know, he's not going to take pot shots from 20, 25 yards. So that statistic will flip a bit.
All right, nice one. Excellent. Well, that's that then. Rob Smythe, many, many thanks for coming in.
Thanks, James.
Thank you, Sean Ingle.
Cheers, James. Cheers, viewers.
Raphael Honigstein.
All 10 of you.
Raphael Honigstein.
Thank you very much.
Producer Pete. And Hildegun, who's been filming this for... this is kind of a valedictory outing in this pod, isn't it? Because when are we...
I think we move on the 22nd of December.
22nd.
We move to...
Much nicer.
And this is what the pod actually looks like. Unfortunately, we were going to have James supping cappuccinos and reading the morning papers on video. But,
right, well, there's still time.
I wonder who's going to move in here and start doing pods from here.
Yeah, that's interesting.
They're knocking the building down. Their plan is to knock the building down and build luxury high-rise flats, but in these economic times, it could just be a waste ground. Perhaps Spandau Ballet tribute group could
I'd like to think of one of these blue plaques outside the building.
Right.
Yes.
Be nice, isn't it? Anyway, listeners, enjoy your weekend, and we'll speak to you on Monday.